Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, we are talking with Michael Johnson, Managing Director of Sales for Diamond Financial Services. Diamond Financial Services is a national SBA lending firm that's Small Business Administration loans. Michael has over 25 years of experience in financial services with a heavy emphasis on commercial real estate, small and middle market business lending, and entrepreneurship. Prior to Diamond Financial Services, Michael was a turnaround and restructuring specialist with the consulting firm Escaller & Company. In this capacity, he advised middle market companies on Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings, cash flow analysis, and liquidation of assets. His career also includes entrepreneurship, as he founded and operated JFG Capital, a commercial real estate finance company based in Chicago. In addition to his career, it has included executive positions at both Morgan Stanley and Chase Bank. Michael received his MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management and currently resides here in the Triangle with his wife and two daughters. Michael, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So let's just start out. What is an SBA loan and why do we care about them as business people?
Well, there's a number of reasons. One, SBA is the Small Business Administration arm of the federal government, our federal government. And it is a, you know, they do not lend the actual cash, but what they do is guarantee a bank that if for some reason there's a default, they'll insure that default, and in some situations up to 75%.
So they're actually kind of underwriting the risk of the loan.
You could say that, at least a portion of it, right? So they make it easier for banks to take a little more risk. More importantly, they allow for equity injections to be a lot smaller than the normal business acquisition or startup. So instead of having to put down 30 to 40% on a conventional loan, you may be able to put down as little as 10%, sometimes less than that in unique situations.
So let's kind of walk through a scenario today. I'm a small business. Yeah. I need $100,000 to expand my business. I've gone to the regular bankers to get the traditional loans, and I'm not quite qualified for those.
Right.
Is that when I come to look for an SBA loan?
You don't have to start there. You can start with an SBA loan, but let's say you do go that route. You start with a conventional lender, and they tell you no. First of all, let's be clear on a couple of things. Just because one bank says no doesn't mean another bank in the same scenario won't say yes. Two, if they're not considered an SBA, you definitely should look at an SBA because in the situation you just mentioned, the bank has taken on all of the risk.
Right.
If they take on an SBA situation, they're insured. This thing goes bad, 75% of the money they recover, regardless, as long as it meets the SBA guidelines.
So, okay, let's kind of change the scenario. I'm a small business. I need $100,000. I've been in business for at least 3 years. We're doing good.
Fantastic.
We have customers. Our doors are open. The light's on. We're paying the rent. But we're growing so fast, we just don't have the cash.
Yeah.
And so we're coming in to a lending institution, a bank or Diamond Financial, mm-hmm. and need help with the loan.
Right.
Why an SBA loan? What are the positives besides the one you've already listed from the banking side? Mm-hmm. But as the person borrowing, what benefit do I get? And how does the process work? Just kind of walk us through that.
Let's start with the biggest one, which is cash flow. If you go into a bank, they're going to probably give you a 5-year to 7-year term maximum. So that means your
right.
monthly payments are based on 5-year amortization or 7 years.
And that cash that was tight that we're borrowing is now paying the loan.
Exactly. Well, make it a 10-year and your cash flow can get better. That's the minimum you'll get on an SBA.
Okay.
If you involve real estate, it goes to 25-year amortization.
So if I needed to expand and didn't want to rent, but I wanted to buy my building.
Yes.
I can do that. Or my
yes.
condo or what business condo.
Exactly.
Okay.
And now you may be paying less owning it than you would if you were actually renting it.
So your payment may be less and you're building up an asset.
You're building up an asset. You're building up some net worth, obviously net worth for your business. And you make your business a lot more attractive for future acquisition or an exit for yourself.
So that's succession planning when I finally get around to retiring, right? Or handing it off to my kids.
For you, that may never happen, but for some
my exit strategy is death. So no, retirement's not in my vocabulary.
All right, understood.
So we're this small business. We come in. What information do we need to know to come in with, prepared with? We're in business 3 years, but Do we need financial statements? Do we need our personal stuff like we would to guarantee? Are there still personal guarantees? All of those.
Well, let's go through all that because that we could.
I'm
we
bombarding
could talk,
him.
Yeah, you could not talk about another thing besides those things. So, first of all, just know offhand, they're going to want, if you've got 3-year history, they want 3 years of tax returns. Almost any situation, either
just the tax returns,
full tax returns. You know, we'll also need profit and loss for the current year. So, okay. If you are applying right now, we'd have to get through September, the first three quarters of this year, both your profit and loss and your balance sheet. And then, in addition, 2013, 2012, and 2011 full
okay,
tax
let's
returns.
Just let's just make this refine this a little bit. I'm sitting here. I know I need to borrow. I'm going to borrow in January. So mm-hmm. I'm going to have all the financial statements through the end of the year. We'll make this easier. Mm-hmm. So we're going to need 2014, 2013, and 2012's full year tax returns in the P&L statements.
You got it.
Okay.
I don't need the P&L statement necessarily for the older years, but the most recent year I do need the P&L because they want the details of what's going on.
You don't want to see the growth trends or anything by comparing those?
I do compare the growth trends. Great lead in because I'm looking at 2012, 2013, and 2014. If you are in a trend where it's going down, that's a major red flag to any lender.
Right, because you're actually looking for something to sustain.
Sustain
and you're not
or
growing.
Grow.
Right. Yeah.
Sustain or grow. And your business plan, what are you going to do with this cash? And you don't have to do a full business plan, but at least give an executive summary of what's going to happen with this cash.
So sources and uses for repaying it and how you're going to use it to make more sources to repay with.
Exactly. Now, beyond that, I want to know not only your business tax returns, I also want to see your personal tax returns.
I'm a corporation. Why would you want to see my personal tax returns?
There's a number of reasons. One is you may have another business that we're not aware of, and it affects what is called global cash flow. Your spouse, if they're not involved in the business, may have expenses or another income that could help make a decision on this loan. Outside income is actually valuable to a situation where you're asking for cash.
Just like assets. So
exactly.
your home, your retirement accounts,
exactly.
Your kids' college fund.
All of that. So let's talk about the home before we get off that topic. Because the one thing SBA requires, if for some reason your loan is not fully collateralized, that means either by real estate or equipment, then your personal home or your investment homes become available to the SBA to put a lien against, the bank to put a lien against.
Right.
That
so
property.
If we're saying I'm borrowing the $100,000, it's not for a building, it's not fully
it's
for inventory,
capital.
It's working capital. So that may be salaries and stuff. There's nothing to collateralize that. They can't put a lien against a piece of equipment or the inventory, and those are done less and less.
Right.
So they're going to look for some other asset that says, I can put a lien against, in the event you default, I can come after this.
Exactly. And that could be your primary residence. And that is a part of it. The banks do not have an option there. They have to put a lien on available collateral. Now, if you don't have a home, or if your home has a mortgage where you're underwater, or if your home has a mortgage where, you know, it's valued at $250,000, and your mortgage is $250,000, there's no lien to be taking place.
So a lot of people I've been seeing that are in business have put their real estate assets in an LLC trying to kind of avoid this. Does that avoid it if you're the sole owner of that real estate LLC?
If they are aware of it, they will put a lien on it. Let's make that clear. If it is necessary.
But do you have to disclose that?
I own it. Yeah.
Yes.
If you own it, you should disclose it. And yes, it's owned by an LLC. Now, if you have less than 20% ownership, you may be able to get away with in that scenario. But if you've got a majority ownership in a piece of real estate, even though it's through an LLC, you know, the LLC is designed to protect you against liabilities against your personal asset, not necessarily fraud for the application.
Just asking the questions. So we have this asset. We're going out. Our home, let's say it's fully paid off. Mm-hmm. We're in good shape. We've been saving, and we had one of those little short loans, and we put everything we had going into it. So now it's going to be a lien. But is that a first lien or a second lien, and how does this work? If I default to the bank, not that we were planning on this. We're highly successful, and everything is growing, and the economy is gangbusters. We're going to get this $100,000 and turn it around. But if something went wrong, do they go first to the government and then the government comes after the secured asset, or does the bank go to the secured asset? How does this work?
The bank will go after. I mean, the bank, first of all, they'll do their best not to take your home, and the SBA is not trying to own homes.
Right.
But your home is at risk. It is a first lien against your property if you do not have any lien on it already. if for some reason you already have a mortgage and they're in second lien position because they cannot right. replace your first lien position, then the lender, the bank lender, would have to go, and SBA would have to go to the first mortgage holder and get their permission to foreclose on you after paying them off.
But right, but don't you have to inform the first lien holder when you go get the second lien?
Exactly.
Okay. So there's all of these little dynamics that we have to think about. So we're going, and we'd have to do it whether it was a traditional or an SBA loan if we were going to use our assets to secure it. So we're borrowing this $100,000. We're going to use it for new employees, some inventory,
marketing,
some equipment, marketing, all of those kind of things. And so we know we're going to do this in January. We're putting together our financials, and we've talked about a business plan. You said it didn't have to be a really big one, but right now we're even pointing to why it's even more critical to have that business plan, not only to share with the lender, but for us to actually have a plan to use
this money.
Oh, you
should have a plan. Yeah, this is the one thing I preach to a lot of my clients and saying, look, you know, you're about to take on, and my deals are usually a little bit larger, $500,000, million, $2 million. And by the way, SBA can go as high as $5 million on a 7A loan. So you shouldn't take on that type of cash without a real plan. And quite honestly, you need to write it down.
Say that again so everyone hears it, because I harp on this all the time, and we've done shows about business plans. Not having a plan is planning to fail.
Oh, my God, it is. And more and more we've seen it in past scenarios. And we get a lot of applicants now where we're the advisors and educators on those situations. You need to have a plan. And quite honestly, the underwriter and credit committee and everyone involved wants to see that you have a plan that you can actually execute upon. What are you going to do with the cash when you get it?
And what's that return that you're expecting for deploying that cash? How much capacity do you get from adding a person if you're a small manufacturer?
Sure.
Or if you're going to do the marketing campaign, how many customers do you think are going to come in, spending how much
exactly.
money, how frequently? Those kind of things. You have to connect the plan to the financials.
And monitor it. You know, once you do get the cash.
Oh, no, it goes in the drawer on the shelf and collects dust.
No, but, you know, you have this advertising marketing plan, and you start off the first 3 months. If you're getting no results, hopefully you're modifying and adjusting that plan and say, hey, advertising on the radio worked well, but advertising here, you know, on the internet worked so-so, and we've used no social media. Let's adjust there. Whatever you need to do to adjust.
Yeah, so you're going in. You've thought about your business. We're sitting here in the middle of November. January is going to start being a booming month, so we should be planning and putting all the information together if we get the $100,000 or let's take it up to that $500,000 you like to do.
Yeah.
So we're really expecting a big order from our customers. There's going to be all this demand for products and services. So we're going for $500,000. What key elements should we have in that plan?
One is your projections, right? I need financial projections to say, you know, if I take in this cash and I get it February, or let's start with January, every month, what will my revenues do?
Same-day approval.
Exactly. Same-day approval.
Just for our example.
For our example, you know, January through December 2015, I have a monthly plan on what will happen with both my revenue and my expenses. After that, I have a yearly plan for the next 3 years. So projections for the next 3 years are crucial. Second thing is, how are you going to execute this? Who's going to be responsible? Who's going to be the person that actually drives this growth or whatever it is that you're trying to do? And sometimes it's real estate, sometimes it's other things. But let's just say working capital. How are you going to deploy the capital, right? When will you actually pull the cash out?
Yeah, is it all going out in one lump sum?
Exactly.
Or is it going out a little bit and having different effects?
And part of that should be on your projections. So things of that nature is what you need to prepare for. Projections is something people forget. We actually help our clients with that a lot because we know if it gets to an underwriter, you don't have projections, they kick it back immediately.
Right. So we want that 2015 plan to be by month. We're looking at our revenues. We're looking at all of our expenditures. We're looking at our accounts receivable and our accounts payable to make sure our terms are favorable and we're doing all of those kind of things.
And make sure you throw in the amount of debt that's going to be associated with that $100,000.
Oh, no.
We're
not going to be making payments. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. People seem to forget that a lot when they get projections to us. You're like, well,
where's the actual loan?
You're actually making the payments. And then after that, are you still profitable?
Right.
Are you still profitable?
Is there a time lag? Because you're going to deploy, everything kind of has a learning curve or a time lag. So if you're spending money in January, February, and March, let's say we spend $100,000 then, the return might not hit till April, May, or June.
Yep.
And
or
so
may
that,
not hit
that
till next
line,
year.
Right.
Explain it to us. Tell us why. You know, tell us why, you know, you're paying, you've got a federal government contract that won't pay for 120 days or start paying 120, 150 days out. Underwriters can get that.
Right. But you just have to communicate whatever those details are.
Exactly. Both in writing and in numbers. Get used to Excel.
Well, so we're doing 2015 by month. Do we have to continue 2016 and 2017 by month or by quarter or by year?
No, it can be by year. And because they know after a year's, you know, can you really get to the details of what's happening 14 months, 18 months?
Now, my preference is always to make sure it's at least by quarter, especially so you can see the seasonality and where you're going to have to reserve cash to make those lovely loan payments as you go through.
Well, that'd be great if you do it. If what's necessary as far as SBA is concerned is annual after the first 12
months. Now, after the third year, it starts to be a Ouija board forecast, and we are a magic eight ball. So we all know that. So we're sitting here, we're putting together these numbers. When should we come in and start a conversation about the loan? Not the day we want to apply, surely.
Please not. Yeah, that is a mistake. Come as early as possible. You should start inquiring now. Get on the internet and start looking into the type of forms you're going to need. One of the biggest forms that's going to be a part of this is called the personal financial statement. Do not fill out just any. It's preferred if you fill out SBA's form because they're going to require it.
Save your time and your frustration.
Yeah,
do it once.
Just do it once on SBA's form. It's transferable to any bank.
And that form is on the SBA site.
You can go to their SBA website. I think it's SBA.gov. I don't have it off the top of my head.
I think it is, too.
You can go to that site and find the form. It's called a personal financial statement. The industry refers to it as a PFS. I think it's actually form number 413.
Don't hold him to that, but he's pretty confident.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident on that. 99, 413. But yeah, you should start filling that out because it gives you a picture of how you look net worth-wise and income-wise.
And take your time doing it.
Take your time.
Make sure you're listing everything. All assets, if you own patents, royalties, all of those kind of things, make sure you're getting
life insurance that has cash value, put it on there. Not face value, but cash value. All those type of assets should be added to the thing.
So make sure you go through and you think about what you have there to make the situation look better.
Exactly. And that's another thing. Presentation is probably 75% of the battle.
So spell check. Format tables.
You know, how you present yourself, the financials you consider, the things you say in your business plan, that is a major part of the battle.
Because you can say you believe this, but you need facts for the lender. It's good to believe in yourself and what you can do and have that passion for it, but you really need the facts and you need to exercise care in how you present those. Because if you do a sloppy application, that kind of gives a feel that you're going to be sloppy running the business and doing other things.
And not only that, keep in mind the underwriters, they're human. So they look at all these.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I mean, but they will actually look and say, I got to go through this.
This is too hard to read.
You know,
I can't believe he misspelled there.
There's no projections. What they're saying is fluff. It's just not, it's not presented very, very well.
So don't trigger the BS meter.
Exactly.
So make sure that it connects to what you've said you've been doing and where you want it to go and make it a cogent presentation.
Right.
Not reams and reams of paper, but short, concise, precise.
To the point. Get it across. What's the plan? How are you going to actually make this business more successful than it already is?
Key performance indicators, those types
of
things. What is your industry? What's going on in the economy around? What your customer looks like? All of that kind of information.
Demographics are fantastic to throw in there, things of that nature, especially if you're a startup. We need all of that. You should have done a complete research.
When you say a startup, it still has to have at least 3 years, or can you come in earlier and get on?
No. See, a lot of people are buying franchises now, and SBA is not totally against startups. Startups are the hardest to do, though. Let's just be clear about it. To get debt on a startup, most people don't take
And when you're thinking about startups, you're thinking of traditional things like franchises, businesses in a box.
Exactly.
Not a tech startup that has to do their patent or research their drug and those kind of things.
Forget about it. Yeah. It's very rare an SBA will go in that situation. But if you've been in the restaurant industry for the longest and now you want to start up a restaurant that's a franchise, pretty easy deal to do because of your background, how it fits, the research you do in the area, and why your background fits with this startup and the franchise has a proven track record of being successful, then yes, you've got a shot.
Okay, so this raises the question. We're talking about a franchise. You buy a franchise, but you have no background in it. You convince the franchisor, but the SBA is not confident just because you ran a bank that you can run a restaurant.
Very true. Hey, look, make sure you have transferable skills to whatever business you decide to start up in a franchise. Just because they say it's easy and that anybody can do it doesn't mean an underwriter will agree with you on that. And
we've said that on here on the show when we talked franchises. Yeah. Just because it's a business in a box doesn't mean you can hire the right people, train the right people, deal with sourcing of fresh materials, all of that kind of stuff that the franchise doesn't necessarily handle.
Yeah. There's a guy who recently came to his MBA, very, very smart gentleman, wanted to do restoration industry. Never worked as a contractor, never done anything in electrician, never done anything in any type of industry associated with this business. Every lender we talked to said no.
Right, because there's not that confidence.
Smart you,
right.
Yeah, that means nothing to us. We need somebody who knows this business or has means of knowing this business, some type of connection that's transferable.
Like you could demonstrate that some of the money is going to go to hire the person that's been in the industry for 20 years and knows how to run the business.
You can always bring in a partner or a great manager you've identified who will sign an affidavit that they will be running the business as well with you. That's different. But if it's you and you're coming into the industry, you have no experience, does not apply.
Okay, so we're coming in, we've got our financials, we've got a nice business plan, we've come in and brought you coffee, we've been sitting here chatting a few times. What does the process look now? We've filled out the personal financial statement. Mm-hmm. What's the next step?
There's a couple of steps. One is, let's talk through how long, because historically, SBA has gotten a pretty bad reputation of taking forever to close.
It's the government.
It's the government, right? So it wasn't unheard of a few years back that you could take 6 months in this process. Luckily, that is not the case. They've definitely expedited the process in a number of ways. One is if it's a smaller loan, under $350,000, you can go through what's called an express. And those loans can get completed within a month, so to speak. But the process starts when you complete the PFS, personal financial statement. Provide the 3 years history of tax returns for both the business and your personal. Give an idea of what your credit looks like, and you can go annualcreditreport.com, pull it down. And
if you have a Discover card, it's on there every
exactly.
month.
Exactly. Just give me a copy of your credit report. You want to then obtain what is called a term sheet. This is when you're presented to the bank. The bank looks at the package and says, we think we like this deal. All right? So we'll issue a term sheet that says, your interest rate will be X. The loan amount would probably be around here. As long as everything you presented to us looks good, we'll move
the term is 10 years, 25 years.
Exactly.
This is the monthly payment. This is what we expect you to do. This is what we're putting the lien against. Yeah. Everything that's involved with that.
It's kind of a pre-qualification, so to speak. However, they haven't verified anything. They haven't verified your tax returns, which you'll have to sign a 4506 form.
Meaning they're going to contact the IRS. They're not taking your word for it.
No, they don't. So don't make up tax returns. Please don't do that. They haven't verified the value of your business if you've already got an existing business or if you're acquiring a business. But based on what they've seen. Now, that takes probably less than a week to get done. You've got through phase one. Phase two is getting to commitment status.
Okay, so hang on a minute. I got to ask one question because we were using the franchise example. Are they going to contact the franchisor to see what the approval is, what they've thought about, if they're trying to get a loan to buy a franchise?
Phase one, no.
Okay.
Phase two, they will.
Okay.
Phase two, they will want to see from a franchise a financial disclosure document, which is all of their documents regarding the franchise and their performance, things of that nature. And they will contact the franchise at some point just to get a feel for what they've done or go on registries and find out how they've performed. So if they've had a number of SBAs in that franchise go delinquent,
right,
then that's a problem. That franchise may not fit SBA's requirements, and the lender may say, wait a second, we've had a couple of these go bad. We don't want to go with that franchise. It may not be you that gets declined. It may be the franchise. Hopefully that's not the case. But the commitment status takes a little bit longer. That's when they verify everything, and that can take 3 to 4 weeks. Sometimes as little as 10 business days, which is technically 2 weeks, but I would be prepared for another 4 weeks, provided every document is there. You filled out everything on the application, provided all the forms they've requested.
So this raises something in our business plan. We now know it's 3 months at this point, because by then we've taken the week, we've taken the 10 days, we're taking a few more. So I'm applying in January. I'm going to get the money, maybe approval in March, money in April.
Could be.
And so I have to make sure my plan recognizes that timeline. Not that I'm getting it immediately.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm spending
You're not getting it immediately.
You need to time lag it and take that into consideration.
If you're applying for a smaller loan amount, you may be able to get it in 3 to 4 weeks. Otherwise, you should plan on 60 full days. Maybe
business
90
days or calendar days?
No, 60 calendar okay. days is fine. You could get them done in 2 months. In this new era, in the last 2 years, it's gotten to the point where it can be a lot faster. However, you should plan on at least 60 days, if not 75 to 90 days, to get the deal done.
As your consultant, I'm telling you to plan for 90 days for the worst case scenario, so you have a plan to operate during that 90 days.
Exactly. Nothing wrong with that. That's how far in advance you should be looking into this, right? You should 120 days out as a planner for your business to grow. You should be thinking about getting in touch with someone to get your SBA loan completed.
Well, and we're thinking about this as a business. We know we're going to add somebody. There'll be uptime. We need to look at that milestone and timeline for the business and then backtrack.
Mm-hmm.
If I think I need it in 6 months, I need to start now.
Exactly.
Or at worst in February. So that we have time to deal with this, to answer the questions.
No question.
To get approval if we have a first loan or first lien on our house. Those kind of little things kind of hold up the mechanics too.
Definitely. Definitely. Right? You need to clean things up and get ready for this battle. That's 120 days out.
So we're in phase two. Anything else we need to think about in this phase? Are they going to ask for more information? What kind of questions come up?
Right. You know, the documentation many times can lead to more questions. For example, you're going to have to verify where, if you're a client or business, where your equity injection is coming from. Well, if all of your money was just put in last month, it raises another question. You would have to document where these funds come from or large deposits come from, just like when you're buying a residential home. They don't want any surprises.
Is it a gift? Is it another
exactly.
loan? Did you run up your credit card balances?
Exactly.
What did you do?
The other thing to consider is, and we've had this slip up a couple of times, you are not in a position to go out and get additional debt during the process. So you've gotten a term sheet. You're 15 days into
and
the process.
And you get the personal loan document from your credit card company saying
exactly.
you have access to $25,000 pre-approved.
And exactly.
No go.
Yep, no go. Don't do it now, please, if you can avoid it. Do not go out getting a new car. Anything you do right now affects your ability to be funded. And the one thing you don't want to send is red flags that you don't have control of your finances.
And you don't know what you're doing. You're this close to it, and there's all these surprises, and you're taking all these actions.
So if you're on the fence, the underwriter's going to say, I'm just not comfortable.
So what if we knew we needed the $25,000 to hold us through this? Because we're just growing so fast, we need that $25,000. We had to plan in. If we include it in our plan and go through those
Talk
financials
to me.
And
no
show.
Problem. Right. That's different. But surprises are not
right.
Surprises are not what you want to do.
So it's not that you can't borrow. It's that you need it to be in the plan. It needs to be taken consideration on repaying that.
And let us do an analysis with that included to see if it still will qualify. Because there is this thing called global cash flow. They not only look at the business, they look at what your personal requirements are. How do you pay your mortgage?
How do you live month to month?
Exactly. What's your salary out of this? What are your expenses associated with your family life?
So how long, because I get this question frequently, so I'm going to turn around on you. How long do I have to be in business before my personal financials and my personal assets are no longer asked for security or have an impact on my business? How big and how long?
With SBA, it's not going to happen. Now, conventionally, you can have it happen, obviously, after you become a lot larger. You're in the millions of dollars in revenues. Your profit is above $350,000 or so. There are many conventional lenders who will do things without personal guarantees. And even they cut back with the depression/recession, whatever it was. But clearly, at this point with SBA, be prepared to do a personal guarantee. It's
yeah, I've
not
seen companies
away.
That have been 20 years in business and $20 million, and all the owners still have to give a personal guarantee.
Especially now. Now, prior to 2008-09, you were getting away with it, especially on deals with real estate involved. Now, more and more people are still asking for the personal guarantee. If things go bad, you're personally involved.
So let's say there's more than one of us. I have business partners that are sharing in this. And so let's say there's four of us investing. Is one person's assets all they're going to lean against, or are they going to put the lien against everyone's assets?
They only take up to what they need to collateralize the loan. Personal guarantees, though, are taken out on anyone that has more than a 20% investment. If you are under 20%, we don't even look at it, right? You sign off on it, things of that nature. You're involved with the deal. You have part of the ownership. but we don't look into your personal finances and we do not ask for a personal guarantee. Above that, you're on the hook.
All right, we're going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors and we'll be right back. Focus on Business and WCOM FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org or give them a call at 919-281-1065. WCOM FM and Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org. Or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. WCOM FM and Focus on Business would like to thank our Golden Voice underwriter, Focus Resources, an international consulting firm specializing in all things business, from startup to growth to turnarounds and more. Focus Resources is your partner in growing, running, and starting your business. Give them a call at 919-234-3960. Or visit their website at www.focusresourcesinc.com. And we're back. I want to also take a quick moment to thank everyone that came out to the 10th anniversary fundraiser last week at Hickory Tavern. It was inside the Hampton Inn last Thursday evening. It was a great success, and we're going to have some more coming up in the future, and we hope you will get involved then. If you weren't able to attend, we are 100% underwritten by our listeners and our community companies. You can go to our website, WCOMFM.org, to donate. And we're back with Michael Johnson of Diamond Financial Services, and we're talking about SBA lending. Michael, at the break, we were talking about a situation where businesses are being acquired. And you said there's a little interesting thing that can go on here, and I'm going to let you explain it to our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that most lending institutions, banks, would like to see you put down 25% even on an SBA loan. However, SBA is unique in that it allows the seller of their business to hold a note, right?
Kind of explain that a little bit.
All right, well, you hold a note. So in this situation, you put 25% down. We want an equity injection. Part of that equity injection can be the seller's 15% holding a note and 10% coming from the actual.
So you essentially have two loans, one
for
loans. The SBA and one for the original owner for 15%.
You got it. Okay. Now, that owner basically gets all the cash from the sale, right, because they're exiting,
right,
minus that whatever that 15% equal, and they would amortize that over 10 years, so to speak. But there is one catch from the SBA. For it to be considered an equity injection, part of the down payment, so to speak, it has to be on standby for 2 years.
What's standby? And meaning no payments?
No monthly payments for the first 2 years. So you got to get a seller that's willing to wait and not receive any payments.
Okay, so we're sitting here as the seller. I'm selling my business. It's going to get financed, but 15% of it I'm essentially financing with no payments for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean no interest.
Doesn't necessarily mean no interest, but you cannot have any cash
outlay.
Exchange
right.
That first
so I
year.
Can be, you know, interest can be accumulating
can
on the 15.
You can do whatever you want to.
And then
and
it
amortize
gets spread
it over the 8 years, you know. But it is a way to get deals done, and it's been fantastic for SBA deals and for our entity over the last couple of years, because not everyone had the cash to put down
right.
the 25%, but a deal can get done. Seller's happy, they get to move on. And the buyer's happy because 10% allowed them to get them a cash flowing business, right?
Okay, I want to ask a kind of a curveball question. Mm-hmm. It just comes to mind because we've been dealing with this with some of our clients where they've been taking their 401k money yes. and investing it in the acquisition of a franchise or things like mm-hmm. that. So it becomes the owner of the company, the C Corp.
Yep.
It always has to be a C Corp. How does that come into play into what SBA would be willing to loan for the difference between the prices? In the sale, those kind of things.
They still would want to see you put down in some equity injection. That's your C Corp. You're transferring this money in. Obviously, there's a fee to get that done, but there's no taxation.
So does it count as part of the equity?
It is part of the equity for sure. If it's enough for 25%, no problem. If it only works out that your retirement savings is only a 10% or 15% down payment, the balance still could be complemented by a seller's note. And that seller note has been extremely key in keeping a lot of small business transactions going where we could actually do the exchange, the transition.
So we have this C Corp now. So many small businesses that are out there are set up as S Corps, and mm-hmm. so they're flow-through entities. What kind of things do we have to expect as an S Corp or a C Corp in this planning for taxation-type burdens?
Ooh, you know, you get a taxation, I get my own personal opinion. Now, I'm not a CPA.
This is an opinion and only
exactly.
an opinion. It is
so,
not meant to be advice.
You know, the C Corp, you just have to watch out for double taxation, right?
Mm-hmm.
The S Corp, I think you already know, it flows through to you personally, and that's where you pay the taxes.
And when we mean double taxation means we're getting taxed as the C Corp as an entity. It pays its own income tax. If it distributes any money to you as a dividend.
Yeah.
That's not a payroll, you get taxed on that.
Exactly. So you're getting personal taxation and you've got the taxation on the C Corp, right? However, that's the only way you get to roll over your 401k or IRA without any taxation.
So does the SBA have any preference for the legal entity type?
No.
So
sorry.
It can be
LLC.
What about sole proprietors?
I have a preference. Again, this is only opinion. I really don't like to see that.
And tell us why, because I have that same preference.
Yeah, they're usually, whenever we see a sole proprietor, they're a lot less professional, a lot less sophisticated in their bookkeeping and things of that nature. Where
it's a red flag.
It's a red flag to an underwriter. An underwriter immediately goes, okay, what am I dealing with here?
Yeah, because it's the thing that's the greatest concern when I'm advising my clients is that there's no separation between you and your business.
Exactly.
So it's not like everything's not going to be forfeited, even if there was only a lien against the house. Mm-hmm. All of your assets are up there.
Everything
is the business's as far as it is, because the business is you and you are the business.
Again, that's a personal opinion. SBA itself does not say sole proprietors, we don't like it. So that's not the case.
So with those underwriters we keep talking about, are they the bank's underwriters? Are they the government's underwriters? Or is the answer yes, there's both types there?
Let's be clear on this. There are two types of SBA lenders. I shouldn't say there's actually three types. But the bottom line is there is a PLP, which is a preferred lender partner, where they actually get to underwrite and keep everything at the bank level. SBA has approved them to do all of that. They've met whatever SBA
they're a full agent of the government.
Exactly, in that situation. However, there are lenders that do need to not only underwrite it themselves, after they underwrite it, they send it off to the government, Washington, D.C., or whatever local regional SBA office there is, and have them underwrite it as well to make sure it meets all the SBA guidelines. Then they send it back. So the majority of underwriters I'm referring to are actually at the bank.
Okay. They're PLPs.
They're PLPs.
So your loan documents are there. The relationship was with that bank.
Exactly. All
that first major hurdle is that relationship you have with that, right. that banker.
But you do have the scenario where if it goes, if they're not PLP, and there's some great banks that are not PLP, it has to go to the SBA for an extra 2-3. And unfortunately, when there's a government shutdown like we had last
4,
year.
4, 5, 6, 7.
It could be even longer than that where you're not getting
underwritten. And the fact that these are being underwritten by PLPs or other or banks raises a question that I've also experienced with a client is where the bank itself became insolvent. And so the SBA loans that they had made, it weren't that they weren't making the payments. It was that the bank wasn't there to receive it or in the course of that kind of thing. And that just kind of blew up that SBA loan. Ooh, so what are the downsides to SBA loans?
Well, the downside is this. One is there is a premium to do this type of loan. So there's a fee to take on an SBA loan. It's anywhere from 2-3% of whatever that loan amount
is. So like an origination fee. So if it's $5 million, it's 2-3%. And if it's $100,000, it's 2-3%.
You get, well, under $350,000, I think it's close to 2%. And it is Veterans Day, so I'll mention this. A lot of veterans get breaks under the smaller loans where there is no fee whatsoever currently. That will go away, but for right now, it's a great advantage for veterans in the market. But you do have to worry about that fee because it's pretty substantial. 3% on a $1 million loan, well, you know what that number is. It's not small whatsoever.
Right. And what about the transaction fee for the lender? So is that included in that or is that strictly just the
not
SBA?
Not their closing costs, right?
Okay.
You've got their appraisal fees they've got to deal with, valuation report, any third-party reports they've got to do. They're passing those fees on to
you. So kind of like when you're buying your house.
Mm-hmm.
You have the appraiser. You have to pay the appraiser. You have this person. You have that person. You have this fee for the bank.
Environmentalists, things of that nature, right? Phase ones, phase twos.
And the more complex what you're going to use it for, if there's real estate involved, if there's construction.
Gas stations,
environmental,
hotels, motels, whatever, you name it. If there's more, you've got more to pay in fees.
Well, and you mentioned hotels. I have a friend that's involved in this, and they've been 2 years at getting everything approved for the money to be expended. Just because the state government permitted and not permitted and the bank and banks getting acquired and all those kind of things. So it can get pretty complex the larger the amount is and the more complex of what using it for.
You need to be prepared for that. SBA does a great job with some of the larger deals, but they are more complex and lenders are taking much more precaution in their due diligence. So they're digging a lot deeper. And we've just had a recent gas station turnaround where it took probably 5 months to get that deal done
because EPA.
Environmental concerns, right? They went in, they couldn't be sure about the phase one, so they moved to phase two. Phase two takes a longer time,
right?
And a lot more soil testing, things of that nature. So yes, third-party reports. Be prepared for that fee. So that's the downside of SBA.
So we have third-party fees, we have SBA fees, and what's another drawback?
Well, I'm biased because I actually like SBA and what they do and the opportunity.
But there are always drawbacks.
But there are drawbacks. And that
can you pay off early?
You can. There's no – now, that's an advantage of SBA, right? There's no prepayment penalty if you're on a 10-year amortization. There's only a 3-year prepayment penalty on a 25-year amortization.
Explain what that means.
All right. So if for some reason you're on a 25-year amortization, you decide to buy a business with real estate. In the first 3 years, you pay a percentage of that loan if you pay it off early.
Okay, so you're still paying on the loan even though you paid the loan off.
You pay the loan off, but there's an extra fee to get out of the deal for the first 3 years. Now, many real estate lenders, it goes 5 years.
Right.
So SBA has made it even better than normal, and I think it's a 5-3-1. Don't quote me on that, but it's 5% the first year, 3% the second year, and 1% the third year.
So again, it gets back to what is your business plan and what do you think is going to happen? Look at those scenarios and find out if that's going to be worth it. If in the event things go better than you want and you want out, cook that into the plan. At least it's not the plan necessarily you hand the SBA, but the one you have
you
for your
think
business.
It through, right? Now, keep in mind, 10 years and less on the amortization, there is no prepayment penalty at SBA. That is a fantastic situation.
So give me some pros. We can and cons as they come up. So.
Well, the cons is that SBA is not going to be done in 30 days. So sometimes you go conventionally, you can get done, deals completed in a very quick time frame. SBA is a little more intense, a little more paperwork, things of that nature, and they are digging into it. And the lien against your personal property, that is part of the deal regardless. So you can be 50% collateralized, many lenders will walk away conventionally and say, hey, that's enough collateral for us. Not with SBA. It requires you to get the full collateralization. So it's going to be a lien against your personal property.
For the whole term of the loan. So 25 years, 10 years, whatever it is.
We're not, yes. It does not go away anytime throughout the loan. So yes, it is a part of the deal.
So right now, what kind of deals are you seeing out there? Where's the most excitement going? What kind of sizes? What kind of things are actually franchises, hotels, what all kinds of things are going on?
We're doing a ton of, I mean, the market has picked up. First of all, banks are lending, and the market is great for it right now. We're doing a number of acquisitions in the restoration industry. For some reason, that industry is extremely...
So that's like when your home has a disaster.
Any disasters, entities that are put together that are ready to take over, we do great with those. We love business. We're getting a lot of these family theme parks and things of that nature.
Okay.
And non-franchise, believe it or not, where they're taking on huge pieces of real estate to put together trampoline parks and things of that nature. We love doing those deals as well. Franchises that have been around for a while, have got a reputation, we'll support those. SBA has been fantastic with those. So that's the way to do an actual startup. But otherwise,
what about things like medical practices? Because we have the doctors, the dentists
they're
coming
the
out.
They're the easiest deals to do. It's banks run to fund a medical practice. Dentists.
Even under Obamacare?
Even under it, no problem. They'll back that deal because it's usually something pretty easy you can identify what the cash flow will be. It's going to be a residual cash flow. The insurance are making the payments, whether it's 30 days out, 60 days net, or 90 days. They know the cash is coming usually. So banks run to support any of the medical businesses.
What if you're in an area, and let's stick in the medical. Let's say you provide medical services, but you don't take insurance. You're strictly cash-based. Does that come into play, and does that make you more uncomfortable or want more information if you're innovating
right.
a business model that's not out there?
Yes. If it's unique and they start digging and seeing that, they want you to convince them why this will work, basically. So you should have a pretty good plan to address how you're going to have your revenues be consistent. I would hesitate. If you don't take medical insurance, that's not necessarily a deal killer, especially if your credentials are there. The market you're in, it supports that, you're fine. If you're acquiring a business that doesn't take that, that is actually an advantage because they've got a proven track record.
They've been in business. They've gotten the cash. They've stayed in business.
And they underwrite thinking if you do take medical, then your revenues could go up. So this is fantastic.
Right.
So we're fine. Yeah.
Well, and what kind of people can borrow? Is there a restriction that it's U.S. citizens only? Can there be a mix?
It is not only U.S. citizens. Well, let me put it. If you are a resident alien, you can use an SBA loan. If you are on a visa, a non-resident alien, you cannot utilize an SBA loan, at least not by yourself. A U.S. citizen has to be on that loan application as one of the owners of the business.
Okay, so if the owner comes in, we have one U.S. citizen and then a bunch of other nationalities in, we could still get the loan, even if the U.S. citizen didn't have enough collateral to have the lien against.
That's correct. As long as we get enough collateral. I mean, even if we say enough collateral, I don't always need collateral. If you don't have it, we don't take it. But if you have it, we automatically take it.
Okay, so you're actually sort of saying if I'm living in an apartment, I don't own a nice car, I have no retirement and that stuff, but I have a great plan, I've been in business a number of years, I might be better off because I have no assets to lien.
Wait to buy your home after you get the SBA loan. That's a possibility. We won't take a lien. Now, let's be clear, though, having collateral makes it easier for an underwriter to make a decision to give you the loan.
Okay.
All right?
So
you want there's pros and cons.
Yeah, I have to play both sides of that question whenever it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a step three that we have to think about? We talked about step one and step two. What kind of step three is there in this
step
process?
Step two is the commitment letter, just to refresh. Step one is getting the term sheet. Step two is to get to the commitment status. Once you get the commitment status, you are now in what we, loosely call closing, so to speak.
Okay.
And that is the commitment letter saying, we're going to do this deal. We're lined up the funds set aside for you to close on this funding. However, I've got a list of things I need to know.
You have a punch list.
I've got a punch list, right?
What's on that punch list?
Ooh, it can be a number of things. One is it could be a revisit to your credit. It could be a revisit to your real estate, whatever that is. It could be an update to your business plan. It could be the 4506T that we talked about earlier, that we need that form back, where that form says, yes, we've now connected with the IRS. We verify your tax returns that you provided us match what you reported to the IRS. We may have adjustments to your projections and say, okay, it looks good, but what are you going to do when this actually happens and this actually happens and this hiccup comes? And if you can't answer it, we say we need to modify your projections to make sure they fall in line with these things. We may make a few suggestions about your business plan. There are all kinds of steps, forms, things of that nature that need to be filled out to get you to an actual closing. And that could take another 2 to 3 weeks.
So that's in the 60 days, or that's outside the 60 days?
It should be in the 60 days. Again, everything falling in line.
Right.
And some of this falls back on you as the applicant. How responsive are you to get these things taken care of? Because the forms are not just a one-pager. Sometimes they're 3 to 4 pages. Are you going to sit down? Because you're a business owner. You're busy. Right. Right? Are you going
to
sit
down?
Is
this a priority to respond?
Is it a priority? Right. Get on it. Fill in all the information and get us back the documentation that are necessary.
Now, the listeners, now I like to ask kind of off-the-wall questions that come to mind. So one of the questions that comes to mind is we have events like Hurricane Sandy, where so many businesses get hit and wiped out, or Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. You have an SBA loan and you no longer have a business. What happens?
There's all kinds of, now that, in that situation, you have to apply for all kinds of assistance. SBA actually does have a FEMA division.
Right, that's actually who makes the FEMA loan.
Exactly. So they would actually put together certain scenarios where they could stall. That is not something I've been a part of, so I can't speak on it clearly.
In general.
I've had a couple of deals have come to me that have had those type of loans. But there are ways to get support at that time, and communication with your bank is extremely key during those time periods, because everyone in your area knows what happened.
Right.
And if that's the situation, many of them will actually stall the loans, put it on standby, et cetera, until things are back up and running. They get it. Accumulating the interest during that time period, of course, though.
Of course. So what happens if your business can't come back up and run? Is it just a default? You can't go back into business. You can't make the payment. Your house is gone, too. There's nothing left. What happens in those scenarios?
Hopefully you had insurance. If that is the case, your insurance will cover you in a number of manners. You do risk being in default with the SBA loan if for some reason you make no payments ever again. So I can't get around that enough. However, consider this. As far as the lender is concerned, the SBA is responsible still for the 75%
right.
of it. So the lender is off the hook up to 25%. And we're only talking about 7A, by the way. There are other loans. There's the Express loan, and there's the 504 loan, which is more focused on larger deals.
And we don't have time. We're almost at the bottom of the hour.
Yep.
Here's another question. I own my small business. I had the SBA loan. It included a building, so it's 25 years. 15 years in, and I want my child to take over the business, and he's buying it from me. How does that loan transfer? Do I still have to pay it? How does this work?
It's rare that you can just transfer it over and say you now make the payments. Now, you could try this as an approach. If you're staying involved in the business and you're adding some.
Oh, no, I'm heading to the golf course. I'm going to be down in Florida. It's his problem now. I put him through college. He has his MBA and
Yep, take over. He has to purchase the business.
Okay. And when he purchases the business, the loan can
starts
come
over.
With it?
Yes. No.
Okay.
You're not assuming this SBA loan. You're probably going to start over with a new loan.
So we need to incorporate that when we're thinking about
exactly. How
that business moves forward.
Right.
What if I sold the business and kept the loan and kept making the payments? Is that allowed?
You sold the business.
I sold the business to my child. His purchase price to me that he's going to pay me every month includes
any
the
change
loan payment.
In ownership has to be reported to the bank. They usually put that in your documents when you close.
It's in that lovely term sheet in the close term.
Well, it's deeper than that. It's usually in an encyclopedia that they hand you.
It's in the mice type that no one can read without a magnifying glass.
But I would be careful with changing ownership without reporting.
But if I stayed 5% owner and he took 95%?
Again, you're playing because the ownership structure has changed, right? You used to be 95% owner. Now you're only 5% ownership. They would want to know about that. Luckily, SBA is not coming by quarterly, unlike a conventional loan, and checking on your covenants and things like that.
That's the next question.
Yeah, they're not.
So how often do they check? How often do we have to report in? If we're making the payments, does the bank, local bank still, that did the PLP, still want to see in our quarterly financials? what's going on. As long as I'm not making the payment.
Usually with SBA, we're out of your business. And that's another benefit of SBA.
Except if ownership changes or events.
Well,
in
any of that has to be reported. But otherwise, we're usually not saying, hey, give me your P&L for the last quarter. We want to see how you're performing. If you're under this amount, then we are now calling a default and want to call your loan. That will not happen with SBA.
What about if we use the funds differently than what we had in the plan? We were going to buy equipment. We didn't buy equipment. We leased it and we used the money for something else. Or we're going to buy the building. We decided to lease and we used the money for something else.
Well, first of all, that probably wouldn't happen because if you're buying a building, we make sure the building's available and there's a contract in place, things of that nature. But let's say for whatever reason you don't use the funds for what you said you was. As long as your business is performing and you're paying the note, you probably won't have a problem. You risk fraud if for some reason you took it to go on vacation and then put it back in the business later and you're not performing.
Right.
You're not making the payments on this. You're not performing.
You took off for Costa Rica with no.
That would be a problem.
No ability to be pulled back. Yeah.
If the payments aren't being made. Now, you're making the payments. SBA is not usually there quarterly, again, or monthly, or even annually checking on what you're doing with your business.
But it still would be. Could be, depending on what you did, fraud. Just like under the government grants and contracts I'm always working with, when I see the next nice Lexus in the parking lot, and I say, well, it's the company car. And I'm like, no, it's not the company car. That's your car. It's part of your W-2, and we'll talk about cleaning this up later.
Exactly.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so just be, I mean, use common sense in those scenarios.
Common sense is rare. Well, Michael, thanks for being on the show. Before we leave, let's call out your website and how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, www.easysba.com. That's EASYSBA.com.
And one tip that we can leave the listeners with about SBA loans that they should know.
Well, the biggest tip is, you know, just because your local bank you go in for an SBA loan says no does not mean your loan is a no elsewhere. Everyone else, every bank looks at SBA differently. There are lenders out there that are much more assertive and aggressive at SBA lending. You should go to a place like Diamond that will find you the best place to go.
Sounds good. And until next time, stay focused on the important things.